Hey there. I look into your eyes, and I want you to know that I see. I see that your heart is locked away inside an icy, cold prison. Try to keep everyone out. But you know what? I am an escape artist. I'm going to break into that prison, and I will abscond with your heart to see Watanabe. Greetings. I'm Justin. This is Stevie. Joining us today is Josh, a good friend of ours. And we're going to talk about music, more specifically, genres. Why are they classified as such? What draws people to such things as genres that there are?
Yeah, I think the plan is we're going to take a few genres and just discuss the sound of that genre and kind of what resonates with the audience of that genre. We're going to attempt to do this.
Yeah, in genres that we're fairly familiar with.
Right. Like bluegrass, country, folk.
Of course.
Right. It will be not one of the ones we're going
to do. No, not at all.
Sorry.
Not
that was uncalled for. Uncalled for.
Yes, it's all good. It's all good. I'm not sure if that was a dig at, like, how much. Did we just dig ourselves with how much we don't know about music? Is that
maybe
what that was?
I'm okay with it.
Yeah. I'm not super familiar.
Hopefully I'll
with
redeem myself later.
Yeah. Yeah.
So quick story real quick. My son, just this last week, he was riding his bike. He was at a friend's house and he was riding his bike down this hill. And he's just bombing down this hill. My son's 5 years old. Dope. And there's this gravel driveway at the bottom, right? And he goes to turn the corner, loses his traction, and face first into the corner of the garage, right? So he scraped like a big chunk of his face on the side. It's pretty gross, nasty, no stitches. It's like, you know, road burn, but just on his face, right? So I went to this homeschool organization thing yesterday for this network of homeschooling people that are going to put on this conference. Anyway, I'm talking to one of the homeschool families. And my wife does a co-op and some other things, so she's involved with this network of people. So my son comes up to me, and he gives me a hug, and he says, "Ouch." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry, bud," because I rubbed his face a little bit, and he ran away. And so I'm talking to this couple who I've never met before, and I'm like, "Yeah, his name's Jack-Jack, but we call him Scarface now." Just like, my wife looks at me and I'm like, I don't know what it is about this thing about me where it's like, I enjoy people wondering about
what
me,
the story is.
You know, so like, I don't know. It's just funny. I'll make myself look stupid on purpose and then people think, all right.
Yeah, that's what I do too. That's what I'm doing.
I know it well.
I know it well.
I think I did it so much on accident when I first got married that I was like, you know what? I might as well get ahead of this thing.
Yeah.
At least I'm in control now.
It's better to do it on purpose instead of on accident, which is my tendency. I mean, I did it on purpose. So what am I saying?
Right.
Of course. Yeah.
Of course.
It was planned.
Whoops. There you go again. On purpose.
Yeah. So I think, and we talked about this before, but in regards to, you know, we've talked about, I mean, we've touched on this kind of, like, we talk about genres in general, and we talk about blues quite a bit. But blues is, like, I would say one of the main building blocks that all American music is built on.
I agree.
And I don't know if we've really gone into that aspect on the podcast before. Do you know? Do you remember?
I know that we've touched on blues as far as, you know, very loosely touched on blues and kind of where it comes from.
Yeah.
But I think, and I don't remember, but I think it was more in reference to something else we were trying to get. So using it as a point, we didn't really dive in. But as far as like specifically going into, I mean, we could spend a whole episode just talking about how the blues is embedded in every genre. I mean, you could, if you look hard enough, you could probably find blues in every genre, you know, even if it's one note that's hit at one point in the song, like, you know, but
it's like unlocking the blues.
Yeah, and with that said, I'm talking more, you know, every current, you know, genre maybe that was birthed in the last 75 years or something.
Yeah.
But definitely rock and country and stuff. But,
yeah, definitely.
But I'm thinking more of just diving into, let's just start with the blues.
Instead
of unpacking like how it's embedded in all the other genres, maybe we'll touch on that a little bit, and that could be a cool thing for a later time.
Mm-hmm.
But more of the blues, and there's other genres as well as we're going to get into.
This
sound coming out of a people for a specific reason, right? So you've got a couple elements here, and I'm just going to jump into it, and then we'll try to make sense of it. But one of the elements is you got Africans being brought to America to be slaves, okay? But in Africa, these people were very musical already, right? Different tribes in different sections of Africa, different cultures of music, some very drum-heavy, some not as, you know, but already there's this musical history with the African people before being brought to America, right, to be slaves. And then you mix that with the fact that, okay, now you're an oppressed people, you know, by a white culture that's making you do what you don't want to do, and there's no way to get back home. This is life and generations going through this, right?
Yeah.
And so the anguish of the soul with this musical background. So the cry that ends up erupting out of these people is the beginning of the blues. And I think that's super beautiful. But so it's really cool to look into certain genres like that, because it's like this was a sound that came out. It was a need to express what they were going through, and because of their background and their situation, this is how it's coming out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some cool history too. I know, like, on certain plantations, like, would allow their slaves to have drums, and certain ones wouldn't. Because there was a lot of calls and warnings and different things that they did with drums, even in Africa, right, to communicate to each other when they weren't close enough to hear maybe the voice, right? But
that's interesting.
Yeah. So even the way that the sound was coming out, right, depending on what plantation or what part of the country, part of the East Coast, you know, you were on, was different because of the rules.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. So.
Log it.
Yeah. So it's a cool genre. And then you've got the beginning of the movement for slaves to be free, right? And so certain ones of the blacks that were getting free, you know, they're on the street, and that sound's still in them. And it's coming out, right? And there was also this weird mixture too of like some plantations, there's an intermingling, right? And you got the Creoles coming through that they're growing up on these plantations with, you know, different roles. So some blacks are growing up now being educated and like being more into like the culture. They're not slaves, right? They didn't grow up that way. They were classically trained musicians growing up in American culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't expect to go this far into it, but so then there's this merging of, you know, some of the African Americans that are coming out of slavery and they're trying to figure out how to live life, right? And it's the street and the blues is coming out, and now they're starting to play with some of the classically trained Creoles and, you know, just people that have that education. And so that's where jazz starts to come in, right? Because you get that street blues with the classical background, and then it starts getting crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I didn't mean to get into all that, but I think our main point is just to highlight the blues and what that genre, where it comes from and what that does, you know. So do you have like a background with the blues? How do you feel about it, you guys?
I've never really played a ton of blues. When I was, you know, learning guitar or anything, but it's, I think to me, the thing that comes across with the blues is is that it's primarily, it's very dependent on empathy, which I think all modern music is that way. It's not something that's happening in the background, right? This is like people are documenting an experience via music as the method. And so it's like it's not just something that's happening. It's not just like an event, right? Wow. It's not just something that you pay money and you go to. It's like this is like deeply personal. Like even if it's just one guy playing a guitar. And so I think, you know, that's something that has definitely persisted, you know, since its origin, is there's just this idea that it's, you're breaking apart this outer shell and you're revealing something that you doesn't necessarily come across in a short time otherwise. And I think that's true of all, or maybe not all, but most good music is that it's like you're cracking open this shell and it's, you know, you're putting something to the forefront, and that's different depending on, you know, where you grew up and what you've experienced. But and as we'll talk about, it's interesting to see how the genres kind of blend together and they move is over time.
Right.
They move in different directions, you know, and there's like trends and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not so much what I'm talking about, I guess. It's kind of hard to really explain.
Yeah,
but
I think I'm tracking with you.
Yeah. But
it's like the music expresses a huge level of the emotion without the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, and I think that's that empathy piece is, and the music part being so important. It's interesting because I think a lot of times we talk about, we heard a song and, oh man, I can really relate to that. And I think we don't even realize it, but it's not just lyrically that we're talking about. You know, I can relate to that lyrically, but it's like, no, I can relate that. I feel what is happening. When I hear that song, I feel what's happening. And especially with good lyrics that honor that, you know, it's like, oh man, you know, it can hit places that you just can't when it's just strictly intellectual. You know, that's why music is so powerful.
Yeah.
Just for like as a listener standpoint, I feel like blues is probably a genre of music that everybody can appreciate. Just because it's easy to listen to, and has so many roots in everything else that we've been talking about, and so it's just kind of something that, I mean, they might not listen to it all the time, but it's something that everybody can appreciate and enjoy.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, because it's like one of those things that you hear someone singing the blues, and you're like, oh, man. You immediately, like you said, you immediately know, like, oh, man, they're hurting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But.
And it's like this ability. It's like a time capsule. It's so weird. Like, if I write a song, and then I don't play it in a long time, and I go back to it, it's like I'm unlocking that time.
Right.
It's so strange. And I think that comes across too, mm-hmm. you know, it's like if it's well done, as you know, that those same things are re-unlocked, like not even just for you, but for everybody that's hearing it. It's like, and I think nostalgia plays a part in that too. Like, you know, if you go back and you listen to like one of your favorite songs from when you were a teenager or whatever, and you're like, oh, I haven't listened to that in years, and you listen to it again, it's like, dang. You're like opening like this doorway with, I mean, not just like if you recall an event, you don't necessarily recall the emotions as strongly. So like every time you pull it back up in your mind, it's like you lose some of that edge.
Right.
But then music just brings it all back.
All the feelings. Crazy. All the feelings come back with the memory.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been real recently that I'm working on music. I think I've shared this with you. I'm working on music and I really have reshifted my focus on letting the music talk. So even this, I released a track called Do You Know It's a song that you guys might have listened to it, but anyway, I co-produced with one of the guys at The Source, and the written part is a couple verses that I wrote for my daughter a few years back. But anyway, there's a lot of space in that song. So I've had a couple hip hop artists even like, hey, there's a lot of empty space on that song. Can I jump on that track? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I actually have that empty space there on purpose. Mm. And so that's a smaller picture of even what I'm doing with music right now. It's just because I think I was in a season of thinking that the whole thing needed to be just riddled with lyrics.
Right.
You know, and forgetting, like, wait, let music speak. Music speaks beyond, you know, what the words even say, like what we're talking about. But
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, and I think that relates to hip hop as well, you know. Let's just jump into that genre. Or is there another one along the way that
I mean,
you were thinking of?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many. I think we might as well just do a quick hop and a skip.
Yeah. So, like, hip-hop. Hip-hop's another example. Different time period, different generation. But really, hip-hop is this sound that comes out of an angry generation of African-American kids that are being raised by single moms in tough neighborhoods of the country. You know, primarily birthed out of Los Angeles and New York City. Really, like, those are kind of the key spots. And so the sound comes up, right? The generation, the baby boomers before, growing up in those same areas, hard. But it was a lot more like clubs, you know, like parties. Like, they're partying, they're clubs, a lot of women getting pregnant, and dads being like, peace, you know, I've got another six girlfriends I need to tend to or whatnot. And those kids were the ones that we're talking about, right? And even in the baby boomer generation, there wasn't as much, I mean, there was violence, right? They were fighting, but it was rare for, like, there were no gunshots. They weren't shooting at each other. Maybe, you know, a knife fight here and there, but it was just, I think it was a lot different. And then it just got worse, right? And so this younger generation growing up, no dads, the gangs are starting to emerge, right? The guns came out. Now you got Bloods and Crips, and, you know. And so anyway, this sound coming out of that time period and that generation that is hip-hop, right? And life-giving, right? I mean, if you just even do the research and you go back, I mean, take Dr. Dre and N.W.A., or you take, you know, any of those, Ice Cube's, you know, a part of that. All these guys, Ice-T, like, these guys got a hold of music.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure a lot of them a lot of them we know are still doing dirt and still running the streets. But how much of their time was going into, now they're on tour, now they're doing this music, now they're, you know, so it became an outlet, a way out.
Yeah.
For these young black dudes, right? That are like, wow, we don't have to be, you know, just in this. We don't have to be, like, just, you know, dealing drugs and shooting each other, you know? Like, yeah. we can, there's something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so the hope that gave, right?
Yeah. Yep. And it's something that they understand. Right. I think that's a big piece, too, is it's like, it's from their world.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, so they can see it. And they understand what it looks like and what it is.
Yeah, right.
Because that's true of anybody. Like, if something is outside of your scope, outside of your understanding, it's like you can't really strive for it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, for me, like, I don't strive to be, like, a business executive. Like, that's so outside of what I've imagined. Uh-huh. So outside of my world. It's like I can't even – in my head, I can't even go there. Like, sitting at a – I don't even know what that would involve. Sitting at a desk – I mean, I've seen Mr. Robot, so I probably have some idea. I'm joking. That's a horrible idea of what a business executive is, like killing people on rooftops and stuff. But anyway, great show. Watch it. Sorry, I derailed this.
That's all right. Are you going to bring us back or just leaving us here?
Yeah, I'll bring us back. So speaking of music, the music in Mr. Robot is really great. And there's a few pieces that have a really heavy hip-hop influence. Stevie?
Whoa, okay. Here we are. I guess we're calling this back.
Yeah, that's the best I can do on short notice.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. Yeah, so hip-hop just another picture of that in a genre. This is a sound. It's not just... We've talked a lot about pop culture, you know, and let's set the record straight for even more clarity of what makes music good in our opinion, as opposed to stuff that's just made to bring an audience in, right? Blues was not, it didn't emerge because they were thinking about the listeners.
Mm.
It emerged because they needed to make a sound, right? Yeah. They wanted to make a musical sound to express what they were going through. You know, hip hop very similar. You know, like this is coming out, right? I could go all day on the hip hop culture because so much involved, right? You got these parties. It's basically the tag end of the disco realm, you know, coming into this next generation, and so the parties start coming, or not start. The party's been going on, right?
Yeah.
But then the turntables start coming in. All right, so you still got disco, like, kind of on its way out with this younger generation. Like, our moms and dads are, you know, roller skating and, you know, wearing their bell bottoms and stuff. And these underground parties are taking place. And the DJs start emerging, right, and the scratching. And then the MC, you know, it just starts, like, they're starting to rhyme over, you know, what the DJ is doing during the breaks. Break dancing emerges. But it was really about the DJ at first.
Yeah.
You know, and then the MC, like, the more the lyricist became, like, developed, like, it started to shift, and the MC started becoming the, you know, one of the main things. But another interesting point real quick, it's kind of a side note, but it's really cool to look at, like, the young hip-hop artists coming up during that time. Like, they dressed, like, if you look at the successful ones, the way they're trying to market themselves, they're dressing... All they've ever seen is this, like, disco realm, right? So there's a lot of disco influence in the way that they're, like, dressing.
Yeah.
They didn't necessarily do that when they were hanging out. But, like, when they're trying to market their music, they're, like, astronaut spaced out disco, weird, freaky-looking people, right? And then they're performing, and this is, like, hip-hop's not mainstream yet, right? So N.W.A., and there's some other ones before N.W.A., but N.W.A. comes out, right, and goes, it gets big. And they're the first ones, one of the first ones, where these guys are like, oh, you know, they're wearing Chucks and Dickies. Like, that's what we wear every day, you know? And N.W.A. is like, this is who we are, right? Yeah, and, right. Like, this is where we're at. And so it was the first time, I think, that, because they're trying to change their image, right? Because that's what people do, like. I'm saying like a lot, but you get music going.
It's like.
You get music going and then you market yourself and you change, you know, you bring an image to it. But these guys were, hey, this is who we are. This is how we dress.
Authentic.
Yeah. Authentic. Yeah. So I think that was a big tangent I just went on. But
no, that's perfect.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a point I was trying to make before that. So maybe in my mind it's a tangent, but... What was I trying to say? It's gone.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Well, something I was going to mention really quick is, like, I think a lot of the through line that I'm finding is all these genres were birthed from some kind of conflict, either, like, an external conflict that caused some kind of rift, or which translates to internal conflict. So really it's all just internal conflict. And it's like almost just like processing,
mm-hmm.
You know.
That's the point I was trying to get back to, I think. So thank you for saving me. Now you brought us back.
Got you, fam.
First time fail. You redeemed yourself.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, senpai. Yeah. So the reason I wanted to bring Josh on is because we share a deep-rooted love for the hardcore scene. I joined it late, so by the time I started listening to hardcore, its heyday was over, and it was starting to, like, say goodbye.
Mm.
But Josh was musically active when it was big, like when it was blown up. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, early 2000s to late 2000s, kind of, that's kind of the time frame. And so I don't know, maybe I'll just drop it off to you and just let you kind of explain like how you got into it and all
and
that
maybe
jazz.
Maybe even a little bit on what it is specifically.
Oh, that's a good point too. We should probably explain that.
Yeah. How I got into it was, well, I mean, I would listen to like pop punk stuff, Blink 182, bands like that and stuff. And so, it started from there. And then I heard a band called Emery, which, it's my first experience in that kind of realm. They're not necessarily hardcore. Hardcore is more, it's chaotic. It's yes. Just people yelling at you the whole time, pretty much.
Love it so much.
But it's good. Yeah. The same way. So Emery brought in a piece of, they would sing for most of it, but then there would be like a bridge section of the song or maybe a chorus that they would just scream at you. And it was intense, but it wasn't like, so I wasn't big on like the metal, butt rock scene type thing. Like that wasn't my thing. I was more punk, like I said, pop punk. And so,
Just real quick, with even that said, like, what are some elements about metal that maybe turned you off or didn't draw you in as much that, and then what are some elements in the, you know, the pop punk and the hardcore scene that did, you know?
Yeah. So like metal stuff that kind of turned me off was their typical voice drove me insane.
The metal vocal.
Like, I don't Axl know, a little bit deeper. Just kind of not necessarily grungy. I mean, sometimes it could kind of be a little grungy. Like if you're talking about like Creed or something stupid like that. So it's just, that kind of voice wasn't necessarily my thing. I liked more of the, I guess, the whiny or crap.
But that makes sense to me because it's almost like, when you hear it, it's like you're hearing something that you have felt. And so you're like, I have felt this. And you're drawn to it. Like, and that's how I would describe, like, my getting into hardcore. Like, I definitely get that about metal in general. Also, I think a lot of metal from that time period particularly was not very emotional. Like, it was very, like, disconnected. And it was very much about the music, which is fine. But it's like there wasn't necessarily, at least in the really popular stuff, there wasn't as much of an emotional connection. And I don't know if I want to name names, but I would say that was definitely a trend.
There also wasn't like a fun factor to it.
Yeah,
I feel like it was not a lot like of fun. Where punk had a little bit more of a, you know, like a loosey.
Like you can
trashy too.
Yeah,
trashy. Yeah, like you can just like. Like, you could do a dance verse.
Right.
Like, you know, like, we're just, like, as this song, we're just going to do a dance verse. Like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
You're in the audience. You're having a great time. You're just going to dance along. It's fun. And there's no, like, need to hold up any kind of image or whatever of, like, looking cool.
I feel like I'm getting so much more understanding right now. Yeah. So, real quick, I want you to continue your thought. But I keep hearing punk, punk, punk. So, would it be safe to say, like, punk was kind of a bridge into
Absolutely.
Hardcore?
Yeah.
Because I see that
For me, it definitely was.
Yeah.
There's different, I feel like, different levels of hardcore.
Yeah.
There's definitely some that's geared more towards metal. The way I got into it was more the punk route.
Okay.
So, like, bands like Under Oath, their first couple of albums, they still had kind of a little more punkiness to it.
Yeah.
Or pop punk. And then later on, they kind of shifted to more just heavy hardcore stuff.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, like when they did their big album, "They're Only Chasing Safety." Was that the name of it? That was like their first big one, and the vision was Jimmy Eat World plus metal, basically. And I think that they captured that super well on that album. And then the next album was a little heavier, more discordant. But they had found a sound. It was like a really neat groove, and they kind of fit into it really well. And I think that's why people love them so much, is because they hit this vein that was just so perfect. And it was like, it was geared towards the people of that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like, you just understand it. It's like immediately just like, yeah, it just grabs you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, kind of the idea that we're trying to emphasize or go after and dig into, is there seems to be sounds that generations need.
Mm-hmm.
To listen to it as an avenue to express how they feel and what's going on, that you don't come up with that. You don't come up with that when you're just trying to sell a million records.
Yeah,
sure.
You know, this is emotional, I think, is a huge way of putting it. You know? Yeah.
I mean, the whole hardcore scene, I feel like it's not very common for someone just to jump full in and be like, oh, I like this. You know, it has to be there's a gap that needs to be bridged into it. And for me, it was definitely punk. Like, for example, Justin, he tried to show one of our coworkers. he got him a list of songs to listen to. And our coworkers are like, this, me and Justin are very different.
Yeah, this is not going to work.
And so, but for me, I started off slow and kind of built my way into the hardcore scene. Because Under Oath, that album, Only Chasing Safety, definitely lean more towards the punky side.
Yeah, definitely. Or
the Jimmy Eat World type of style that they were going for. But definitely had aspects of the harder stuff.
Yeah, it was like there was an edge to it. Like, it was like they turned the gain up a little bit. They hit the drums a little bit harder. They pushed their vocals a little bit harder. So it was like they were just trying to unlock, like, this deeper level of just, you know.
Yeah. You feel like it was a bit cleaner than punk in general first starting, like more clarity on the parts,
hardcore, or
as opposed to like,
it wasn't like as grungy as like punk could be. So there's definitely aspects of that. I feel like it kind of transformed to more chaotic stuff as farther it went.
I mean, like, there was, like, with a lot of things in music, there was, like, a very East Coast, West Coast thing going on. And I'm trying not to get too much into, like, the history of it, like, in the year 2001, blah, blah, blah. But just, like, to give you, like, a very slight overview, like, if you kind of look at that aspect of it, you can definitely see they were going for a different vibe. But as time went on, the East Coast, West Coast thing kind of merged into one big thing.
That's awesome.
So, like, I would see, like, like, I would, you know, watch a show with Me Without You, Norma Jean, and Under Oath in a heartbeat. They're so vastly different.
Yeah.
Like, Norma Jean is, like, more so, like, let's do all heavy all the time with, like, a little bit of a break. Under Oath is, like, a pretty good mixture of, like, clean, like, you know, ambient, long songs that really draw you in with really slow builds. And then Me Without You, like, they go into, like, let's just do a folk album, you know, and they
it's
do a bass.
Different.
Yeah. And I don't know. I love that about it. Like, I love that all three of those can fit in one. It's a big umbrella, but it's an umbrella, you know?
Yeah.
And it all feels like it works together.
Yeah.
And that's pretty rare for me. Like, like most genres that I get into, it's like, I don't know if I would see this band and this band. Like, I've seen, like, a while back, I saw it in Flames, and I was like, why are these bands playing together? Like, it makes no sense. Like, but it's because there's a shortage, you know? It's like, okay, well, they kind of play heavy stuff, and they kind of play heavy stuff, so let's put them together. But with hardcore, it doesn't feel that way. And I think it's because the object is not to be heavy. And I think that's the main thing there, is that they're not trying to just, I mean, there is an element of, like, let's hit it harder, like, let's, but it's, the end goal isn't to just be louder or heavier, or it's like, oh, and then this will be a post-chorus that they'll love or whatever. It's more like they're trying to tap this emotional quality that's, like, I don't know, maybe, like, what you said, like, about it being, like, a generational thing. It's, like, they're trying to communicate something. Mm-hmm. But they're all communicating something that's very similar.
Right.
And so, even though the music is very different, it's, like, it still hits a lot of the same beats, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it'd be cool to get into some of that. Why? why you guys resonated with it. Like, maybe take us through your journey a little bit of, you know, where you're at, why punk, right? And then, like, just what was going on behind the scenes emotionally that, like, what was being communicated that lured you in, you know, and why was it so relevant?
Yeah, so, I mean, when I kind of went through the punk phase, and then that was, like, back 2006, 2005, 2006 Glory time days. For me. So it kind of transformed to a little bit of my emo days. That's when, like, the emo scene was big, you know, all the black hair, the over-the-eye type of thing. Yeah. I didn't go full as Robert Downey Jr. would say in Tropic Thunder. I didn't go full retard.
I see what you're saying.
I didn't go full emo, but yeah. I definitely have the black hair. Emo. I went and bought me some girl pants, rocked those for a bit.
You gotta get the girl pants.
Which now they make skinny leg jeans for guys that you can afford.
And they work.
Yeah, they work now.
But back in the day.
Yeah, you had to go to Ross, shop in that girl section. Got a lot of looks. But, you know.
Stevie's like, this is the whole world.
I love it. Tell me more. Yeah.
So it was just in those days, you know, emotional teenager.
And so that's the look, like, to, like, kind of embody, this is how I feel. And this is.
And those bands, the early hardcore bands, or screamo bands back then, I guess, if you want to call them that, that was the look they had.
Mm.
And so it was kind of like into the emo phase that transformed more into a,
right,
kind of like a,
so this is the look that, it did evolve, the sound that we're relating to, right? Which is, that's what, I mean, even as a hip hop fan, I can relate to the music to some degree. I mean, but I'm going to dress like my heroes or dress like the people that I'm, you know, looking up to or that are influencing me.
Yeah. It's a culture thing, you know, it's like you're trying to be like, okay, like I resonate with this. So I'm going to take on like aspects of this.
Right.
But yeah, it's kind of hard not to. I feel like you asked another question.
What I did. So more of like what you just said, like resonating with that. Let's see, like, what was it that you were resonating with? You know, what? So that's the look part. But, like, what's going on in the emotional teenager, right? That's like, this is the sound that I need right now or whatever.
That's a great question. How'd I answer that one? I mean, I guess it was, as emotional teenagers, you get your emotions so kind of round up that you should just come out with a scream or a yell, you know, and
it's just all bottles up.
Yeah, all bottles up until it has to come forth, be birth.
Yeah,
I have
and the fun.
So
thing,
many things I can say.
You brought up fun, you know, which I like to the punk and that fun aspect of it, which I think is huge. Like teenagers, like fun and emotional, are, you know, those are two great adjectives to describe a big part of what, you know, teenagers are going through. So.
Well, For me, I guess I can't speak for everybody, but I definitely had kind of an existential streak that did continue through adulthood. But, you know, just, you know, it's hard to define, but it's like this hopelessness of, I don't know, I have some theories as to like where that comes from. But, you know, coming to grips with expectation and coming to grips with just what life is turning into as you grow up. And I don't know why it came out in that particular way, because there's been so many generations up to this point and none of them produced that, you know?
Yeah,
right. So that's something that I honestly think that's a big question. I don't know that I could really touch on that very accurately, but what I know is, for me, what it was is just this, like, what am I? Like, who am I? Like, what am I doing? Like, what is the purpose of my existence?
Mm.
Like, big questions like that you can't really put into words when you're that age.
Right.
Necessarily. At least I couldn't. I wasn't smart enough. But just, you know, you're still feeling it, even though you can't quite communicate it. But it's like that. You would listen to, you know, Under Oath's a great example for me, and I talk about Under Oath all the time. But I would listen to Under Oath, and I'd be like, they are communicating what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And so, and, you know, later learning, like, I didn't know much about the backstory of, you know, his songwriter or anything. But at the time, Spencer Chamberlain was, he was also struggling with identity because he was trying to be a practicing Christian, but he was also addicted to heroin. And so, you know, you're trying to balance those two things. Like, how do I do this, you know?
And good luck balancing heroin addiction into your life. It doesn't really balance out.
It's So that's what a lot of the songs are about is, you know, just like wrestling, just constant wrestling.
Yeah.
And it's like I wasn't addicted to heroin, but I understood that. I understood the identity thing, like not knowing, like, where do I fit into this? So for me, that was a huge component. And again, going back to, like, the through line, right? Emory talked about that. You know, they very much had that kind of thing going on. Me Without You is the same way. And I think that's one thing that connects all of them is, like, that identity crisis coming to grips with that. And then as their albums have progressed, it follows – it's so strange, but it very closely mirrors my progression through it. Which is really weird, but it's, I guess we can talk about that another time, but yeah, it's weird how, like, as, because they're older than me, obviously, but as I'm growing up, I'm listening to these new albums that are coming out, and I'm, like, it's like it's following my thought progression. It's really strange, but, I don't even remember why I started talking about that. You asked me a question.
Yeah, I don't know. It was great stuff.
Possibly answered it.
Yeah,
great stuff.
It was what kind of got you into it.
Yes.
It's that whole identity thing, you know?
Yeah.
They're walking through something that, or they at least they were at the time of the album that you're walking through when you get into it.
Good stuff.
Yeah, something that just pops into my mind as I think about, you know, as you're growing up, mothers and fathers are a key role into helping you to discover who you are, right? And to be a sounding board.
Yeah.
And then when you're a teenager, that's huge. And there's also an aspect of a lot of what you're going through and they don't understand. Or we're in a generation too. And I'm, you know, I don't know what your guys' upbringing was a little bit different than what I'm talking about now, I think. But, you know, a huge part of our culture now is being raised by a single mom.
Yeah.
If they're with either paternal parent, right? And that's huge, right? So when you don't have half of that, like, that translates to stuff. Plus, I mean, even if you do, like, you're a teenager and you're going through stuff and mom and dad don't get some of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, anyway, my point being, sometimes music or these sounds are like a mother and a father to us in a sense, right? Where they're, like, they're offering that, right? And I feel like that bands emerge with a sound that's going to mother and father the next generation to some degree. Like, the blues allowed a whole generation of people to heal, right? And to come out of some horrific event or thing that was slavery. You can't even call it an event, but, you know, this epidemic.
Yeah.
And, you know, similar, like, you know, you're in your room rocking Under Oath. I mean, man, they get it, right? And it's just crazy. It's cool to hear as they're going through their journey. It's almost like it's what you need to hear when you need to hear it, you know, as you're growing up. And I can relate with that, you know, even on the hip hop side of things, you know, for me as a teenager. But
and it's weird too, like, how, you know, they're not old enough to be part of the next generation per se, but it's like they're just old enough that they're writing about stuff, still experiencing things that I'm also experiencing. And, like, Tim McTague, who joined Under Oath right before they started Only Chasing Safety, he was 17 when he joined the band. So he wasn't that – he's not that much older than me. It's not like he's in his 40s or 50s or anything. Mm-hmm. So it's like we're close enough that he can kind of, you know, it's like he's playing something that I am feeling, which is really strange. But
it's like big brother almost.
Tim McTague's my big brother.
Yeah.
Got the beard.
Yeah, that's true. He has a manly beard for sure.
Yeah. So How about, let's talk to, I want a more inside look on the scene. So you were in the scene, right? What does that mean? Obviously you're listening, but you go to a lot of shows?
I did back in the day. I don't necessarily like fully or hardly ever, unless I'm with Justin, listen to this kind of music very often anymore.
Right.
But when I was in the scene, yeah, I mean, they're saw Under Oath at Warped Tour, and it's the hardcore scene. So it, yeah, I feel like there's levels. there's different degrees of how hard it can be. But back in the day, you go to shows and where normal rock concerts would have like a mosh pit, they would have a what they would call a dance pit, and so they would just kind of clear the floor, push everybody back, and then they would do their little two-step throwing fist thing.
Windmill arms.
Windmill arms, yeah. And, yeah, a lot of people got hit. If people tried to go in and mosh with them.
It's like, nope,
yep,
getting
shut
down.
They would definitely get hit by those swinging windmill arms. And, yeah, it was just, it was always loud and
yeah, it's like you're
right there.
Yeah, it's like one of those, it's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like you're not sitting there like watching the musician so much as like you're experiencing an event.
Yeah.
You know, like you're, it's loud, it's crazy. Nobody's paying attention for the most part to what's happening on stage.
Yeah.
You're just.
Right. Being invited to this moment.
Yeah.
To express that stuff that you're talking about.
Windmill arms.
Yeah. Windmill
arms. So, okay, let me put this out there because this is what is coming to my mind while I'm listening to you guys. And you tell me if I'm wrong, so I'm going to throw this out there. This is kind of what I feel like I'm hearing, you know, but like metal, almost I think of it as like a premeditated dark thing I'm going to do, right? Like, it's super planned out. It's super like, this is going to happen, and I'm going to sneak in through the window, and I'm going to find them when they're sleeping.
Yeah, that's very creepy, but accurate.
Yeah. And where, like, kind of what I'm getting from the hardcore piece is almost like, this is, I need to throw a fit right now, kind of.
Kind
of, and I'm going to do it musically and just get it out and then be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that pretty accurate?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Definitely say.
Awesome. Okay, cool. I feel like I finally get it. Yeah, so hopefully people watching can, you know, that don't, aren't familiar with that genre. I think it's really important for people to see other people in a spot that they can't relate to and they don't understand and still engage, you know, with people that are in those places. And it helps when you understand, you know, the shock value or whatever, you know, these things that we do externally to show people what we're dealing with internally. It's not all about that. You know, it's trying to relate something that's deeper. And again, I think a lot of people who don't understand are thrown off by those things. And so they don't engage, you know, but listening to you guys, like going through those different spots and like, this is an expression, like it'd be so easy for someone to even understand just a little bit of that and be able to step in, you know, and, just be a part of, you know, those people's lives that are, you know, teenagers that are trying to figure it out.
Yeah, and if, you know, if you're trying to get into hardcore, I would definitely, like Josh said, take it slow. Start with Emory, you know, something a little more accessible.
Yeah.
And then move on from there. Maybe move up to Under Oath one day. And then
Norma Jean.
And then Norma Jean.
The Chariot.
So you had a question earlier, I think, before we started. Or maybe you did present it earlier on. Awesome. What happened? What happened, right? Like, you said there was kind of a falling away, like...
Yeah. It definitely, you know, like, it exploded. Like, hardcore was huge. And it made, to be completely frank, it made a ton of money for a lot of people. But really rapidly, it kind of dipped off. And I don't have an answer to that question. I was more just kind of presenting it.
No, this did happen.
I mean, for me, like how, I mean, because I wasn't in it for super long. I mean, I probably started getting out as soon as it kind of deep. I was one of those people that kind of left when it started going down. And it was more for me. I feel like it was good in that season, but then I kind of grew up and grew out of it. You know, I got married, had a wife and kids, and so, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily play that music in with my kids, at least not when they're little, you know? I mean, yeah. It'd probably terrify them. But, for me, it was just a growing up and, you know, moving on to new things. Like, okay, I'm starting to get life a little bit more now. Let's switch my journey a little bit into a different scene. And
Yeah, you grow into different seasons, and then the sound that you need is it's a different sound now.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. So is there any clear direction of, like, where this morphed into? All right, so you said it kind of fell away. You know, is there any, like, clear picture of, like, what is hardcore becoming, or is it gone, or is there new genres emerging that have, you know, pieces of both?
There could be. I mean, I listen to, you know, there's a few bands that survived, like some of the ones I mentioned. Norma Jean's still around. I think they just recorded a new album. I don't know if it's out yet, but, you know, Norma Jean is still around. Undroth came back, very different. That's a whole other thing. I don't even want to talk about it.
Are you happy or sad about it?
I'm happy they came back.
Yeah.
I'm happy that they play music together, and I'm happy that they enjoy it.
Enough said.
Yeah. And then Emery, you know, they don't tour as much, but they tour every year, you know, between 4 and 8 times, do like 2-week tours. So, you know, they do okay, but they have full-time jobs. Like, they're working dudes, you know. Right. They're like in their 40s now.
Yeah. So somebody said something about, is Warped Tour, is that coming to an end then?
I think it's done. I think the last year was their last one.
Okay, interesting.
And that was like a big, that was, to, for a lot of people, that was like the last bastion, you know?
Yeah.
It was like one of the only hardcore, like, festivals. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of metal festivals, not a lot of hardcore. Like, and you might see, like, some hardcore bands make an appearance, but it's not the same vibe at all.
Okay. So, okay, interesting. So punk being like a bridge, right? That, let's see, punk and metal, probably somewhat a bridge, right, into hardcore.
Yeah.
Do you guys see any bridges? Because it's kind of hard to identify a bridge if you haven't seen the other side, right, where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
But do you guys, have you ever thought about that, or do you see any potential bridges out of hardcore into something else that maybe are in the works?
That's a great question, dude.
And if not, then maybe we should be looking at that.
Well, I definitely have, like, in my band, I definitely have the most hardcore tilt.
Mm-hmm.
And Josh and I have talked about that, is, like, when I play a guitar riff, I'm definitely writing something that's more Norma Jean than Megadeth or whatever.
Right.
And it's not the same, but I have a little bit of that streak, you know.
Right.
That being said, I don't know a lot of newer, like, I don't even know of any new hardcore bands.
Yeah.
Like, so that's kind of an interesting question. Mm-hmm. I can't even think of one. Like, there's some newer ones, but they have, like, Let Live. I think of Let Live. They're a little more, I would say they're hardcore for sure, but they're a little bit more poppy, not in a bad way at all, but I think they only did 2 albums and then they call it quits.
Mm.
So it's like, there's not a ton out there as far as I recall.
Yeah. I mean, when I was kind of getting out of the scene a little bit too, it started kind of turning a little bit back towards punk a little bit too. Some bands were, you know, I mean, there's like Comeback Kid or Five Strong and stuff that really more empathized the punk. So it's like it was kind of coming back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Where it went, I don't know. I haven't.
Right. Wonder Years are still around.
Yeah.
And they kind of take on, they have some hardcore elements, but they definitely take on more of that punk. But it's like more, it's interesting because it's very punk, but it's a little bit more deep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not trying, not deep like, I don't know, not philosophically deep.
Mm-hmm.
But they take, it's not about hitting it hard and fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's about exploring, mm-hmm. right? So it's like they take their time a little bit more. They do longer songs.
More progressive?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And they do some interesting stuff. Like they'll have two drummers on one song, mm-hmm. or they'll have three guitarists on one song. And so they'll switch around their band members to make whatever they want. Like, oh, like I want three lead lines on guitar in this song, so let's do it.
Right.
And I'm not super familiar with them, but I would say they kind of come out of that spirit, that same spirit of punkiness that hardcore kind of was birthed out of.
Mm-hmm.
So they were basically, it's the same birthing pit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
gotcha.
They may be cousins.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting to watch, like, you go from a teenager into adulthood,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden, this other generation's going through what you did, right? And yeah. it's kind of hard to anticipate what that's going to look like for them,
mm-hmm.
you know, even though you just went through this thing, and, yeah, interesting, just to, as time goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Definitely.
Be fun to keep our eye out and see what's happening with music when it comes to those, you know.
I really should pay attention to that kind of thing.
I hadn't even thought about it. It was kind of in the moment, you know, while you yeah. guys were talking. Yeah. It's not a thought I had before we started this podcast.
Well, it's a good point because a lot of the bands that I used to listen to, like I said, they're done. Like Chiodos is done. Chariot is done. You know, like a lot of those big bands that people like were like, what? You know.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't really know of a lot of new ones, off the top of my head. So that's a great question.
Be on the lookout. One Small Army getting ready to drop some tracks.
Some hot tracks.
That's real, real talk. Real talk.
It's going to be hot and steamy.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, shout out. Hey, so this is Sound Mind Podcast. Sound Mind with no space in the middle.
Yep, because we're cool like that.
We're cool
like
that.
We dab on them haters.
What?
I hate myself for doing that, by the way.
So you can find us, Sound Mind Podcast. You can find us on Apple Music.
The YouTubes.
Is there more than one now?
Yeah.
Don't answer that.
Yeah.
Spotify. Where else are we? CastBox.
That's I think another one. Wherever podcasts are found.
Yeah. Look us
this
up.
This is a great way to put it.
And, yeah, I want to plug the studio. Skytree Studios. We're located in Spokane. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, Skytree Studios. And then next week we're going to have Malachi Arreta in here for an interview. And he's a hip-hop artist, local hip-hop artist coming up in Spokane. And... in the middle of just starting his freshman year at Whitworth College. So trying to,
oh, really?
Yeah, trying to balance out. He just graduated from high school last year from Ferris. You know, trying to balance all that freshman year with hip-hop and, you know, where his life is headed. So, yeah, join us next week. Well, I guess it won't be next week.